So let's get into that news. Ross was in court today, and it was his first appearance since a short procedural appearance back in November. And it was more substantive than the previous appearance for sure. 97.9 The Hill's Brighton McConnell was there, as I said, and he will give us all the details coming up on the air at the bottom of the hour. But for now, the big takeaways: the defense was arguing to have a $200,000 bond set for Ross. That was denied by the court, and on the process of determining whether that bond would be set, we did learn some of the evidence of the case. One of the takeaways would be that Ross allegedly knew one of the victims but did not know the other victim prior to the night. We also learned the firearm used in this incident belonged to Devin Clark, one of the victim's father, and Clark was the one who brought the firearm to the place where the incident happened. And for the first time publicly, the extent of the two teenagers' wounds was shared. Woods was reportedly shot 4 times, and Clark was shot 5 times. There are more details available in an article on chapelboro.com, and as I said, we will have Brighton McConnell on shortly to give us all the details, as he was there in the courtroom this afternoon as those proceedings were happening. Again, back to that story shortly. Isaiah Mackay Ross making his second court appearance in Orange County this afternoon. More crime news now, as Monday turned violent in the p.m. hours in Chapel Hill. Last night around 10:30 p.m., police responded to a 911 call from the housing community on South Estes Drive Extension. That's just across Fordham Boulevard. When police arrived, they found 27-year-old Kason Thorpe dead of an apparent gunshot wound. Thorpe was a resident of Oxford, North Carolina. Police are working to identify a suspect, but no additional information is available at this time. And this came after there was a shooting on North Carolina 54 in the 1100 block right around 5 p.m. yesterday. That's out on the bypass on the south side of town between Merritt Mill Road and Greensboro. Driver of one car fired into another car, striking a passenger who sustained non-life-threatening injuries. Police say they are working to identify a suspect. Anyone with any information about either of these incidents is encouraged to contact Chapel Hill Police. Moving on from crime news to state news now, the year 2023 will be a pivotal one for several key state-level issues, but perhaps none are as important as legislative redistricting, the starting point for our elections. Lawmakers in Raleigh are likely to begin another round of redistricting this year, and Republican leaders are hoping for a new map that's even more favorable to GOP candidates. How much leeway will they have in drawing those maps? Well, that's partly up to the U.S. Supreme Court, which heard arguments last month in a case that observers say could be vital or devastating for American democracy. 97.9 The Hill's Aaron Keck has more.
The most serious legal threat our democracy has ever faced.
That's Kathy Fang of the organization Common Cause. She's talking about Moore v. Harper, a case out of North Carolina that could have major impacts on elections nationwide. Moore v. Harper began in 2021 when Republican lawmakers drew new congressional district lines after the 2020 census. The new map was drawn in part to benefit Republicans, a practice called partisan gerrymandering. The state Supreme Court has ruled that partisan gerrymandering violates the state constitution when it goes too far. And last February, judges ruled that the GOP's map was unconstitutional. Lawmakers drew a new map, but the court rejected that one, too. Instead, judges appointed 3 special masters to draw a third map, which was ultimately used in last year's midterm. Tyler Day is the policy and civic engagement manager at Common Cause NC.
Election Day is the foundation of Democrat governance, and partisan gerrymandering can make it meaningless.
Republican leaders appealed the case to the U.S. Supreme Court, who agreed to hear arguments in December. In past cases, the legal dispute has largely been about how much gerrymandering is too much, a distinction that's notoriously hard to pin down. But this time, Republicans are making a much more fundamental argument about whether state courts can have any oversight over election laws at all.
At the bottom, what these folks are asking for is extraordinary.
That's former acting U.S. Solicitor General Neil Katyal, who argued the case before the Supreme Court last month.
This case is about checks and balances. Who would want a world in which state legislatures can do whatever the heck they want.
It's generally been understood that state courts can overrule state legislatures who enact election rules that violate the state constitution. In fact, the U.S. Supreme Court has said as much on several occasions, including recently. But Article 1, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution explicitly gives state legislatures the power to set the rules for federal elections, and Republicans want the Supreme Court to rule that this provision means state courts don't have any substantive oversight. That's called the independent state legislature theory, and it could extend not only to redistricting, but also to other rules, including early voting and absentee voting. Most legal scholars reject the theory, but three Supreme Court justices, Alito, Gorsuch, and Thomas, have argued in favor of it, and a fourth, Brett Kavanaugh, seems to be on the fence. In December's oral argument, the other five justices all appeared skeptical of the theory, leading observers to predict that the court will ultimately reject it. But voting rights advocates remain wary. Once again, Tyler Day.
This case is really, truly vital to our democracy. It's not a Democratic or Republican issue. It's about all of our voting rights.
The Supreme Court will issue its ruling in Moore v. Harper sometime between now and June. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Aaron Keck.
Thank you, Aaron. You can find a print version of that story by visiting chapelboro.com. The time is now 5:14. Actually, let's keep things rolling here a little bit. As we continue the first few days of the new year, we've been talking with local leaders about what their resolutions are for their prospective communities. For Carrboro, it comes after many years of planning and conceptual projects. The Carrboro Connects Comprehensive Plan, passed last summer, lays out how the town will approach its growth and goals around climate action, housing, and economic sustainability. Here's what Carrboro Mayor Damon Siles said regarding his goals for 2023 and that comprehensive plan.
My intention, I won't call it a resolution so much as an intention, is to get us to the point on the council and in the town where we are sincerely and earnestly implementing our Carrboro Connects comprehensive plan. You've heard me talk about our comprehensive plan many times, Andrew. We are now at the point of being ready to really dig in on the implementation. Before the holiday break, we received an update from our town staff about the work they've been doing over the past 6 months or so to get us ready for these first couple of years of implementation or so. Our role now on the town council is to do some strategic planning and to identify what our policy priorities are, what our real priorities are for implementation. We can't do it all at once, so we need to set up some priorities, and that's part of what we'll be doing later this month during our council retreat. So as I said, the town staff has been working over the past several months to set the table for implementation of Carrboro Connects. I think it's our role now on the council to dig in. It's time to dig in.
That's Carrboro Mayor Damon Siles speaking there. To listen to that full conversation, which included details on Carrboro's bicycle-friendly status and Mayor Siles' declaration of Libocotton Day in Carrboro, you can head to our audio archives on chapelboro.com. It is 5:15 now. We're going to hear from some community partners. Then we'll check traffic and weather together, look into the world of sports, and then we'll visit with Brighton McConnell, who is in the courtroom today for the hearing for the person accused of murdering Lyric Woods and Devin Clark. He has an article posted on chapelboro.com, but we will hear from Brighton himself, who is in the courtroom, coming up in about 10 minutes. Looking to the world of sports now, we've got some basketball action coming your way tonight. Tar Heels have looked pretty good of late, even without one of their major contributors, forward Pete Nance. He's logged big minutes in the team's first several games, but it took just two plays against Wake Forest last week for Nance to tweak his back and need to come out of the game. On Monday, head coach Hubert Davis provided some insight into the grad student's rehab and his availability for tonight's big matchup against Virginia.
He did an individual workout yesterday. Today, he'll do more of an individual workout and also practice with us today. And then we'll just have to see. I don't know if he'll play or not. It's a game time decision. I can make a strong argument that he'll be ready to play tomorrow, and I also can make a strong argument that he won't be ready tomorrow. But I do know this, he's getting a lot better every day. I think the biggest part for him is just having confidence that, you know, his back won't tighten up again. And so that just comes with practicing, that comes with time, and having that confidence that you feel like you can go out there and contribute. But he's doing everything that he can to be out there on Tuesday. And my hope is that he is, but he's trending in the right direction. I just can't tell you whether it's, you know, he'll be ready to play or not.
That's head coach Hubert Davis speaking there about Pete Nance and his recovery from a back injury. We'll see if Nance hits the court tonight against the Cavaliers. Coverage begins at 7:30 with countdown to tip-off right here on your flagship station for UNC basketball, 97.9 The Hill. Also playing in that game will be your reigning ACC player of the week, and that is Armando Bacot. After averaging 21-11 last week in the two wins, he is your player of the week. Over to gymnastics, where Carolina took down NC State in their home opener yesterday, and it wasn't just a win. It featured some career highs. The team got standout performances from Lolly Dekanidze and Julia Noer, and in fact, UNC's team score of 196.225 is the program's best ever in a home opener. That bests a mark that was previously set all the way back in 2002.